My name's Tony Hazel. I'm a GP and an e-learning fellow for the RCGP. I'm here with Colin Fitzpatrick and Chris Campbell, and we're talking about telephone triage, particularly in the days of COVID-19. This is the fourth and last episode, and we're going to be talking about managing our patients' health anxieties regarding COVID. Chris, I took a call last week where at the start I was actually convinced that the patient needed A&E because she couldn't say more than a few words without getting out of breath. But after a minute or so, it was clear that that was stress and panic, and she settled down and she was fine. Is this a common problem at the moment, and how do you deal with it?
Tony, it seems to be a really common problem at the moment. I do a lot of out-of-hours work, and I would say about 80% of the phone calls we're getting are for people worried about COVID. And a lot of people do start off that call very anxious, very uptight. And I think it's natural to be anxious, and I think a lot of doctors are anxious, a lot of healthcare workers are anxious. And I think one of the things to do is let the patients talk and express how worried they are, and listen to them and address what their worries are. One of my tips that I quite often start with patients like the one you were mentioning is to let them talk. Usually after about a minute or so of getting it off their chest, they feel a lot better, and then you can start your history taking and make a fresh assessment based on what they're calling about.
Thank you. That's really useful. Colin, do you have anything to add to that?
I think it's important to make sure that you have the core knowledge and facts about COVID at your fingertips, so that you can quite easily explain to patients without having to sort of research it what the reality of their situation is likely to be. I think it's important that we remember that the majority of people who actually get COVID infection, many of them will actually be asymptomatic. Some studies would suggest 60% of people infected are actually completely asymptomatic. But even of those who are symptomatic, 80% will recover with an unpleasant and not very nice disease, but not a serious disease, a bit like a bad flu. 15% will require hospitalization, and a further smaller percentage of those will require significant supportive hospitalization.
Yes, so reminding our patients that actually coughs and colds happen all the time, and actually if they hadn't known about COVID, they might have just experienced this as a cough and cold, I suppose, can help to normalize it a bit.
I think that's correct. Yes, absolutely.
Yes. I have found in the last day or two that some of our patients are getting a bit anxious about these shielding letters being sent out by the government. Have either of you experienced this, and what would you suggest we say to people?
It's been a large volume of our calls to reception over the last couple of days about the shielding letters, people who are on the list and didn't realise they were, or the opposite, that they're not on the list and thought they would be. We've managed it in the surgery at the moment where we've actually put them all through to a doctor to speak to for reassurance. Obviously, if demand gets higher and we're needed more for face-to-face, that might not be possible. But at the moment, we found a quick chat with a doctor, some reassurance, can go a long way to dampen down anxiety and prevent issues down the road. The ones that aren't on the list who think they might be, for example, the well-controlled asthmatics or the people with mild COPD haven't made the list because they've not got severe COPD. I've used it as an opportunity to reassure them a lot, saying, well, it's good that you're not on the list. That's really reassuring, because if you were to get COVID, you wouldn't be as bad as the ones that are on the list potentially. So it can be a way of reassuring someone, but there are people who are not on the list which probably should be on the list, and then we're adding the read codes to them and advising them really the isolation.
Yeah, I think this list has shown some of the limitations of coding and maybe some of the ways we might code things differently in the future. I would agree with you. I've had loads of asthmatics, or even ex-asthmatics who haven't had an inhaler in years, ringing up very, very stressed about this list. And I will just use this as an opportunity to plug the short screencast that we have about shielding, which gives quite detailed information about who should and shouldn't be shielded, and is on the RCGP COVID hub.
Just to pick up on that ex-asthmatic point, it's been quite extraordinary how, as you'll be aware, many children get a bit wheezy and are given an inhaler when they have a bit of a chest infection. And 20 years later, some of them are now coming back saying, I had asthma. I need inhalers in case I catch COVID.
Yes, absolutely. I've had several of those conversations this week, actually. And that probably also brings us on to the I've got asthma, please can I have a rescue pack consultation? What would be your take on that?
My view is that if you're bad enough to need a rescue pack, you're bad enough to be dealt with by a doctor, and it's not a good idea. So I would not be advocating that in any way.
I think there was a big thing going around all the social media that everyone should have rescue packs, and then there were more things going around social media saying please don't have one. They're not a very good idea. I think we're mainly giving them to our patients with COPD who already have them rather than new out. Have any of you found problems with patients wanting their medications early in order to not run out?
We've had lots of requests initially of, can we have a couple of months of medications? Can I have a double order? And we found, especially with some of the inhalers locally, I'm a Devon-based GP, that we've run out of a lot of the preventer inhalers, and we're having to switch people to other things. And now this is not a good time to be switching when people have been stable on them. So we have got that, and we're having people requesting 3 or 4 Clenils to last them over the isolation period. We have been requests for 4 or 5 salbutamol inhalers, and it's causing massive disruption down here. The other thing is people stockpiling paracetamol rather than buying 1 or 2 boxes from the supermarket. They're buying out the supermarket, and we're getting lots of people requesting prescriptions for paracetamol, which is taking a long time to process and slowing down chemists who then can't dispense essential medications for patients.
So really the message needs to be, ask for your things at the normal time and don't hoard, so that we don't get the same situation with medicines that we did with toilet paper.
Exactly.
Correct. Yes. Yeah.
Fantastic.
We can always do batches for medicines, and some of our patients who we haven't had on batches, we're now putting on batches. And the other thing, that we've got a cohort of patients who seem to like to collect prescriptions from the surgery, and obviously we want to keep footfall in the surgery down. So we've insisted on all patients to have an electronic prescriptions, and there's no reason why patients would need to come to the surgery to collect a prescription.
Yes, that makes sense. And that will probably help us in the future by having our numbers of electronic prescriptions up, less paper flying around. Thank you very much. That was the 4th episode of 4 in our series about telephone triage, with particular emphasis on the days of COVID-19. I'd like to say a big thank you to Colin Fitzpatrick and Chris Campbell, and thank you to you for listening. Please look at the other resources that we have on the COVID-19 hub on the RCGP website. Thank you.